Welcome to The Word at Westminster, a podcast with talks, studies, interviews, sermons, and more from Westminster Church in Barrie, Canada. It's about learning and living God's Word. Hello, everyone. Welcome to this episode of the podcast. It was T.S. Eliot, the poet and playwright, who wrote, "Where is the wisdom we have lost in knowledge? Where's the knowledge we have lost in information?" Those are good questions, he asks. Plus, there is data overload. Researchers at the University of Southern California found that the average person in 1986 was exposed to the equivalent of 40 newspapers worth of information each day. By 2006, that number had increased to an equivalent of 174 newspapers a day. In 2019, and that was 20 years ago, over 20 years ago. In 2019, YouTube reported that 500 hours of new video content is uploaded every single minute. Yep, every minute, and that was 3 years ago. Combine all this with news, blogs, radio programs, social media, Netflix, TV, movies, music, and more. The list goes on, and that's a whole lot of information. Where is the wisdom we have lost in knowledge? Where's the knowledge we have lost in information? One of our sources for wisdom in this age of data overload, and when we can mistake information for wisdom, is other people who have walked the road of life before us or with us. Their insights are battle-tested as they have gone over hills and through valleys. The rest of us can benefit if we slow down a moment to listen to what they have to say. To help us with some of these insights is today's guest, Claude Cox. He's going to share five words of wisdom that he has gleaned from others through the years. But before we get into our conversation, let me just tell you a bit more about him. Claude was born in Meaford on Georgian Bay. He studied at several theological schools and holds an earned doctorate from the University of Toronto. He has been chaplain at Grove Park Home for Senior Citizens in Barrie for more than 30 years and has tried to listen closely to the elderly. He was a minister of the church attached to Grove Park for almost 20 years. Claude has also been an adjunct faculty at McMaster Divinity College for a long time, teaching Old Testament studies and Hebrew. His wife is a nurse and they have three children, two sons and a daughter. And Claude and his wife have also been a part of our church family here for many years at Westminster. I'm not sure exactly how long because they predated my own arrival. And he's always been such a thoughtful and gracious presence, someone to talk to, someone to learn from. So Claude, thank you for taking some time to be on the podcast.
Well, thank you, Matthew. It's really good to be here with you on this sunny spring day. Mm. As I just I mentioned just a bit ago that the bio really doesn't go so well. I was going to redo it, but I'd like to say a word or two about why this topic interests me so much.
Yeah, please do.
So I grew up in Meaford, small town. Some of you know it. And I grew up with both sets of my grandparents. And I had a great aunt who lived just a couple of blocks away. And very often, we had dinners together. I saw them often, and they would tell me about what it was like, when they were young. And my grandparents, Cox in particular, had to leave what is now the Meaford Tank Range in 1942 because their farm and the farms of about 160 other people were expropriated. Hmm. And so when I was with them, my grandmother and my granddad would often speak about life on the range, as they called it, which would be pre-1942. My grandfather was one of eight, and when he and his siblings got together, they would talk about what it was like when they were kids. And I would listen, hunting stories. It's a wonder you survived, because they would hunt together, and they weren't sometimes as careful as they might have been. And we also had some church friends that we saw often. And my parents and these two other couples, we were together often as well. And they'd talk about people in the community. And I remember Elgin used to say, he'd say to me, "You remember Claude?" And he was asking me about somebody who died before I was born, that he still remembered. And there was lots of stories about these people, the local characters and such like. Mm. So I grew up with this kind of wisdom. And I got interested in my family history. The Coxes settled in the Meaford Tank Range in 1937. And I had an elderly relative who was like 102 when he died. And I would often go see him to get the stories from him about our common ancestors. And Joe would say to me, I asked him a question, he'd say, "You know, My mother always said, and Joe was born in 1875, and when he said, my mother always told me, you knew that this information was really old, and it was oral history. Mm. So I came to Grove Park Home because I was interested in chaplaincy. And over the years, I've told quite a few people, you know what? If a person stayed here long enough, they could become wise, you know, through listening. And I've been there more than 30 years. I'm still in this process of becoming wise. I'm still listening to people tell me their stories about their lives and so on. And so you glean, if you listen, you glean a lot of wisdom about life. And so today I want to share with you kind of five words of wisdom that I gleaned, that I got from elderly residents of Grove Park Home, who when I came were like my grandparents. And then as time went on, they were like my parents that age, eh? Mm-hmm. So one of these residents, Charlotte, said to me one time, keep it simple. That was one of her rules for life. So I've just got these five kind of simple words of wisdom that I have picked up and which I remember and which I try to use. Now, I'm going to cut at the end, I'm going to mention a biblical character named Barzillai. It's not a name that many people give their kids anymore.
It's not on the list of top 10 names anymore.
If they ever did, but many of you know King David from the Bible, mm-hmm. and so it's in relation to David. So I'm going to come back to Barzillai because he has some words that fit in with one of the points I want to make. So are you ready?
Yeah, let's do it. And thanks for that background context. I think that helps too, your appreciation of story and just growing up and being around people in wisdom, and also realizing through time that people have these wonderful things to say. So kind of cultivating the art of listening too. So that's great context. Thank you. Why don't you jump into number one?
And they're really, I mean, I can't tell you the life stories of these folks, mm-hmm. though they are written down to some extent. I collected the stories. So remarkable people, one and all. I'm just going to use, for the purposes of, since this goes far and wide, I'm just going to use first names this afternoon or today. The first word of advice, you can only do what you can do. I don't know how many people at Grove Park said to me they were going to come to some program of mine. And for this, that, or the other reason, they didn't feel up to it or whatever. And I would always respond, you know what? You can only do what you can do. And that's very good advice for all of us. None of us is superhuman, and we have our limitations. And if early on in life we can realize that we do have limitations, we can't bear the world on our shoulders. We can't accomplish everything. We cannot work 24 hours a day. And we shouldn't play 24 hours a day either, but you can only do what you can do. Now, my namesake, her name was Cox, last name. But Mary was born in 1913 in Gravelburg, Saskatchewan. And she just about missed out having parents because they came from Ireland. And they were intending to come on the Titanic. Yes, you remember, there's a connection. But their farm didn't sell. I think that's what happened. They booked. Yeah, the sale of their farm was delayed, so they missed the boat and saved their lives.
They missed the boat.
But Mary told me one time, they eventually came to Toronto, and she worked a number of jobs, but she worked at Eaton's. She worked at Eaton's in the China department. And so she would be on her feet all day. And one of her words of advice to me was, use your head to save your feet. This is understood that you can only do what you can do. Mm-hmm. Use your head to save your feet. And that is good advice. Hairstylists and so on who are on their feet all day. Yeah. You need to do some things to save your feet because your feet can wear out if you're up and you can get all kinds of issues.
Yeah, wow.
Well, I remember that. She said, use your head to save your feet. And that means use your head to save your energy to it suits various kinds of situations. Use your head to save your feet. Mary told me that. Now, she eventually made her way to Barrie, and she was one of the first residents at Collier Place downtown. I remember her well, of course. Well, we shared a last name.
Well,
sometimes people apologize, right? This is what happened. People would say to me, well, I'm really sorry I couldn't make your program, whatever it was. And it's an apology. And I said, you know, don't apologize. You can only do what you can do. We need not apologize for not being able to do everything.
I think you actually maybe shared this with me at one point, maybe halfway through the pandemic, or at least what now seems like halfway through the pandemic, so maybe a year ago, and we were emailing back and forth about some things, and it was something to this effect. You can only do what you can do, because you feel like, oh man, this is a hard time. We could do this, that, and the other thing. Maybe we should do this or that. And I think also just by extension to people at large, you know, especially with the social media and the internet and everything else, you see what everyone else is doing. You kind of compare yourself. Maybe I should be doing that. Maybe if I'm going to be a good parent, I need to be doing that. Their kids are doing this and that, or so and so. It's just like this constant thing. So this is a wise word. You can only do what you can do.
That's right.
Yeah.
You can only do what you can do.
Yeah.
And then we have to let the other stuff go. Sometimes, you know, very often seniors, they're busier after they're retired than they were before, when they had working lives. And sometimes, now that I've reached that plateau in my own life, seniors are always busy because it takes a lot longer to accomplish what you used to do in less time, you know? And you have to confront this, don't you? I'm not climbing trees anymore. There are things you shouldn't do. You shouldn't try. And so limit your activities to the amount of energy and so on that you have. So it's very good advice for anybody who is listening. Yeah.
All right. That's good. Thank you.
Second word. We're ready for the second word.
Yeah.
Okay. Jesse was living at Grove Park Home when I came, and I was really interested in her. She had been born in the Shetland Islands in 1899. The Shetland Islands. And she's kind of given me an interest in the Shetlands ever since. Anne Cleves has a series of detective novels set in the Shetlands. And they're on Netflix now. And so the Shetlands. But one of the things, she had never married. She had worked at something in the First World War. Sometime after the First World War, there was a contest Britain-wide, or United Kingdom-wide, including Europe. It was crafts, and she knit Shetland wool. She told me there were 20,000 entries, and she got first prize.
Oh, wow!
Amazing, eh? And she came to Toronto, and she thought, given the climate. The Shetlands don't have a great climate. She thought about the climate in Toronto. She thought that a knitting shop would be a good idea. And so she opened her own shop. I think the address was 528 St. Clair Avenue West. If I remember correctly. I think that's it.
Wow.
And so she operated this shop by herself for many years. Her brother had been wounded in the war. She took care of him. And she would say, oh, you're waiting for this, aren't you? She would say, the old people always said, Christmas comes and goes, and it's as far away as ever. Christmas comes and goes, and it's as far away as ever. And ever since she told me this, just more than 30 years ago, I've asked people, do you know this expression? I've asked elderly people, do you know this expression? And I guess nobody else has come from the Shetland Islands because no one has said, oh, yeah, I've heard that.
Yeah, it could be a local thing.
It could be a local thing, local to the Shetlands. But the point of it is, of course, don't wish your life away. Don't wish your life away. You know, little kids are waiting for Christmas all year long, or we're waiting for a birthday, we're waiting for some date. And Meanwhile, the days pass and we're wishing. We're stuck in the wishing mode. But we shouldn't do that.
Mm-hmm.
Because these things that we wish for, the days and so on, they come and go. And then they're all that far away again. So we need to like enjoy each day, live each day. Mm-hmm. And I've always thought that is very good advice, whether we're young or old. I mean, when we were young, all the pretty girls were about 5 years older. So you thought, oh, wow, if I just, I'm 12 and I'd like to be able to drive. Oh, boy,
yeah.
Life will be really good when I get my driver's license.
Mm-hmm. Sorry to interject here, but I think the also that part of that too is when you do get older, you can wish yourself to be younger as well. Yes. Like, for obvious reasons, maybe to do with failing health or whatever, but it's like, I looked at an old journal entry years ago before we had kids. And it was like, I don't write, every day or anything, but sometimes, and it was like Lauren on a day off, it was like slept in, read the paper, drove up, to her mom and stepdad, sat on the dock. It's like a day of like zero actual responsibility. Like, I can't remember the last time like that. So at the same time, maybe also just, hey, realize this is what my situation is in right now in life. And, it's different than before, but don't wish it away. Nevertheless, there's still opportunities and good things about this stage, even though it's not what it had been.
Exactly. I read something just in the last few weeks about growing older and good advice. And one of the words of advice was enjoy your birthdays. Celebrate your birthdays as you get older. This is, don't wish you're younger. Enjoy the age that you're at and be proud that you have achieved it. Just getting there. Another resident we had that I liked her a great deal. She was born in 1897. I would have known her in the 1980s. And she had some dementia, but she used to quote part of a poem that went this way. If wishes were horses and beggars could ride, the earth would be drowning in an ocean of pride. And she used to recite this. I heard her recite quite a few times. And it's from something. You can Google it and perhaps find where it's from. If wishes were horses and beggars could ride, the world would be drowning in an ocean of pride. Mm-hmm. And some of you have heard the American humorist Garrison Keillor. And if he didn't cite this one time in one of his monologues, I thought, wow, because I'd never heard it before. And Ada could not really tell me much about that saying, but that's the wishes thing, isn't it? Yeah.
Oh, like always wishing for something more.
Yeah.
Yeah.
If wishes were horses, mm-hmm. Just wish, we wish our life away. The people wish their life away with the lottery. Oh, if I only won this, and I only had that. And yeah.
I remember talking to someone. That's good. I remember talking to someone about, and they had remembered, looking forward to retirement.
Yes.
And then now that retirement was here, they missed how noisy and crazy the house was when the kids were small.
Yes. Yes. Isn't it true?
Yeah.
And I don't know how many seniors at Grove Park Home have told me over the years, the best years of their life were when their kids were little, best years of life when the kids were little. So if you have small children, enjoy them. Doesn't last very long. And looking back, we wish it would last longer. Mm. Though there are times, we must admit that there are moments when you wish you were past. You just got past that. Yeah, but Jesse's saying from the Shetland Islands, I remember that well.
Well, that's good. Thank you.
So we're at three. We're at three. This is the middle, for women. Mm-hmm. So Richard, I was born in 1919. And he's from the South River area. And he had been a veteran and he loved to garden. He loved to volunteer for various things.
Mm-hmm.
He would be the person who'd light the fire at the, I think it was the United Church, South River, in the wintertime. He would be there. He'd be opening things up. And so he was also an avid fisherman. And he would rise early in the morning to go fishing. And his daughter would hear him get up and go with him. She's just a little girl now, eh? So he's carrying her through the bulrushes and the weeds and all this stuff. And one of the rules that he had, one of the words of advice that he gave his daughter, and which I heard from her, is clean the trail for the next person. Clean the trail for the next person. Hmm. So these dawn fishing trips, you don't leave stuff behind. And it can be restated in various ways. Should I tell you this? He was a bit of a serious guy. Sometimes he was a big, big guy. And he'd be opening the church. And somebody said to him, because he was a bit gruff, she said to him, "My Richard, but your underwear is a little tight today." I wrote that down. But he said, clean the trail for the next person. And we restate that in various ways. We restate it as leave it in better condition than you found it. And generally speaking, for us as a human being, leave the world in a better shape than we have found it as individuals. But clean up your mess. You know what? One of the things I admired about Mr. Dress-Up, do your kids watch Mr. Dress-Up?
Well, I think that was done before they came onto the scene, yeah.
Oh, that's so unfortunate. Well, you get the same advice from other people, I'm sure, but Mr. Dress-Up, listeners will remember the tickle trunk on Mr. Dress-Up.
I remember watching it.
Got you in the circle anyway. And you'll remember then, at the end of the day, all the stuff that he'd taken out of the tickle trunk went back in the tickle trunk. Mm-hmm. And I have reminded my children how many times, you know, Mr. Dress-Up put all his stuff away at the end of the day.
And since he's the authority, they should do it.
Mr. Dress-Up's a pretty good authority, but it applies to so many things, yeah, you know. Yeah. At the end of the day, you know, if you've thrown your clothes on the floor, see if they get someplace. Mm-hmm. And if you've left tools out, you know, put them away, because you could step on something in the end of you could injure yourself. And in our personal lives, clean up your mess, you know? Mm-hmm. If you've messed something up, do your best to put it in order and make it better for the next person who comes along. I like that, for the next person. Think of the next person. This isn't paying it forward, by the way, expecting that if I do this, it's going to come back to me necessarily.
No.
Clear the trail
for
the next person.
As you say that, You know, one of the first things that comes to mind is, you know, just obviously respecting people. Another thing is, you know, the environment, you know, and you alluded to this, I think, you know, and we have a big footprint, I think, as a society. So that's one of the things that this is a, not only an individual thing, but a larger thing.
Yes.
To me, it seems very connected to the idea of simplicity as well, kind of a simplicity of way or manner. But as you talked, one of the things that come to mind is clean up after yourself, not just physically, but sometimes we can live in such a way that it's a bit of a bull in a china shop.
Yes.
And so cleaning up after yourself might be like, be aware of kind of the, the social emotional wake that you may create in other people's lives about which you might be unaware. I don't know. I have to flash that a little bit, but that comes to mind as well.
Well, you know, before we started talking, we have this 6-month-old kitten. And she spends time in my office here, and she has a place in the bookshelves with some towels and so on, and she sleeps there. But she's 6 months old, and at times something gets into her, and she just tears around like crazy, and she can make a great mess. And I think this is some of you have had puppies and other people like beings that you live with. And you know what I mean? But we need to move past that and think about, you know, who's coming along this trail next. There's nothing such, have you had this experience? You're hiking in the woods someplace on some trail that is absolutely pristine, and you find a Coke can.
Mm-hmm.
It is so disappointing.
Yeah.
People who discard things and then spoil it for those who come later. So to think about those who are coming. Yeah.
Well, just this morning, I was walking my dog Buddy. As you know, we recently moved out to Shanty Bay down. And anyway, I was down by the water. Just the sun beautifully coming over, and the ice hasn't melted yet. Not totally anyway. Anyway, just enjoying this, just thinking, you know, what a beautiful day. Look down and there's a bunch of, you know, empty beer bottles half stuck out of the ice right there. Like, oh, I just, you know, anyway. Yeah. So clean up after yourself.
Clean up after yourself.
It's a good one.
Clean the trail for the next person. That was number three.
Mm-hmm.
Number four. Well, Edith was born the same year as my mother, which was 1927. Mm-hmm. And she had an expression which I liked. It's about the importance of friendship. She said, "Find some new friends, but keep the old. The one is silver, the other gold." So find some new friends. Find some new friends, but keep the old. And the one is silver, the other gold. Now, as we get older, as we age, it's not as easy to make friends anymore, you know, because when we went to school, there were all those other kids. And in our workplace is can be an important social place for us. Mm-hmm. And when we're active playing baseball, we're curling, we're doing various kinds of things, we're engaged with a lot of other people. But as we age, the numbers of those people and some of those activities diminish. And so we have to make an effort, more of an effort, to make new friends. And I know I say to residents at Grow Park Home, you know, if you don't have children, you really need to adopt some. I mean, not formally, I'm kind of kidding, eh? You need to adopt some young people for yourself, especially if you don't have children. And more generally, we have people who are near and dear to us, who are, I mean, like our own children, or others who are like our own parents, given your age. But the importance of continuing to make friends, keeping your old friends, you know, the ones you've had for a long time. And if you've had friends for, some people have had friends for 50, 60 years, my, how fortunate you are. But it's important to make some new friends too, to enrich your life. And I think you know what I mean by that. And you can choose the thing. Oh, Agnes, we had two sisters who lived at Grow Park Home. And when they were young, they were known as the Todd girls. That's not their married name.
Okay.
Agnes and Lois. That's the sisters. And as life turned out, they came to live at Grow Park Home. And they were originally from down around Churchill, south of Barrie here. And they were the funniest folks. They had a lot of stories. And I used to like to have lunch with them because there'd always be these expressions and sayings coming up. And so Agnes had offered me this one day. "You can get along without your relatives, but you can't get along without your friends." You can get along without your relatives, but you can't get along without your friends.
Yeah.
Oh, my. And so we get our relatives, but we choose our friends.
Mm-hmm.
And our friends... Our friends become very, very important to us throughout our lives.
Now, you said, you know, one of the things you said is friends enrich your life. Can you give us an example or two of how that is the case?
Our friends have different interests than we do. My father was a carpenter. When he had an expression, he picked up from somebody, a carpenter's joke. Carpenter said, "You know, I've cut that board three times and it's still too short." So I grew up, I'm a carpenter's son, but I'm not really keen on that sort of thing that much.
Right.
But we have a friend who's very, very handy and all that kind of stuff. And so our friends bring us different interests, right? Contrast. But our friends also give us common interests. We have a neighbor across the road. Well, she's been our neighbor since we came to this house in 1989, and she loves to read. So we exchange books. She's a heavy reader. And so I give her a couple of books, and she gives me some books. It's the exchange thing, right? Because you have a common interest. And friends often have common interests and then contrasting interests. That's what I mean by our friends. Mm-hmm. You know this expression? Yeah. You find someone who's just on your wavelength, we say. Mm-hmm. And that's a wonderful thing. Mm-hmm. Your friends, some of your friends at least, are on the same wavelength, and they just resonate with you in a special way.
Let me ask you this on the theme of friendship. There are times in life when, you know, we might need a word of correction, or we might need some redirecting. Why are you more receptive to what a friend has to say than what a stranger has to say?
Yes.
Like, why do you think that is?
Yes. Because true friends have your interests at heart. Mm-hmm. Don't you think?
Yeah.
Your friends will know you.
Yeah.
They will know you. And so they can say things to you that might be offensive or hurtful coming from somebody else. They have your interests at heart. Mm. They're not intending to hurt you or criticize you particularly, or they want to affirm you, but they see something that might prove very helpful for you in a number of ways.
Yeah.
That you didn't see. That's another thing. We don't always see what really happened. And sometimes we assume something has happened. Somebody may have said something to slight us.
Right.
We didn't hear correctly. And our friend heard it correctly and said, no, I don't think mm-hmm. she meant that. I don't think that's what she really was saying. Friends can do that. They're so mm-hmm. important because we bounce our ideas off friends. Now, before I was married, I lived in an apartment building here in Barrie, not far from where we live now. Mm-hmm. And it was possible not to talk to anybody a whole day. You know, it is possible. And when you live by yourself and you don't have like social events or whatever, you can really misconstrue a lot of things. Mm-hmm. And so our friends sort of keep us, healthy. Yeah. Mm-hmm. They keep us healthy. We need friends to keep us healthy because we need relationships. Mm-hmm. Human beings were not intended to be the Lone Ranger.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, that's a good word. A couple things come to mind when you say that. I just looked it up when you talked about a friend saying something. The Proverbs 27:6, the wounds of a friend can be trusted. When you said that came up. And then when you mentioned about community and being in the building, you know, obviously the kind of the social background of that comment right now is certainly the social isolation many people have experienced. But I think it was John Ortberg one time, he cited a study about the importance of community. And I've used this in a service, so this might sound familiar. And I'm quoting from memory here, but it was like, you know, because of the value of friendships and connections that we have, it's good for your health, not just emotionally, but physically. And it was like better to eat Twinkies with friends than broccoli alone. Something like that. The idea of it actually is health benefits more than what we might know. But that's great. Sure. Enriching friendships.
For sure. Just yesterday when I was talking to one of our neighbors, and she had the opportunity to go to be with a group that afternoon, and she was trying to decide in the light of COVID, you know. Mm. And she explained the circumstances. I said, well, you really should go. Because she lives alone. And I said, well, you can go crazy by yourself. So weighing a social event where she'd had contact in this sort of post-COVID period against being by yourself, we need to have people.
Yeah.
Are we ready for number five? Because I guess time is slipping away.
Yeah. Number five. We're all good. Let's move to one last comment on number four before you offer number five, Claude, if it's okay. One of my hopes coming out of COVID is that, you know, I think before the pandemic came along, more attention was being given to mental health issues and challenges and some of the stigma going down, which I think is good. But I think my hope is that it will accelerate the conversation because, you know, the importance of being together and being out and doing those things to our mental well-being. So hopefully it will kind of push along the conversation a little bit further. Anyway, just want to get in there, but okay, number five.
No, that's right. I think that's right. We're increasingly aware of how important our social contacts are in the light of COVID-19. Mm-hmm. So the name Barzillai comes up. And the point here is family and home are central to human life. Family and home are central. When I was in school in Toronto, one of our friends back in Meaford asked me to visit her brother, who is at Toronto General and dying of cancer, stomach cancer, I think it was. I don't know, it was the first funeral I ever conducted, but I went to see him and he was hardly verbal. And the one word that I took away from that visit was the word home. Home. That's not from E.T. the movie. This is long before E.T. the movie. Home. But home is central. I don't know whether he thought he was going to be with God as his home or whether he wanted to return home to the farm. Mm. But we say there's no place like home, and indeed there isn't. The centrality of home and family. Mm. So Lois, who is a sister of Agnes, these two sisters who were so funny, had so many sayings. Lois, who was born in 1902, said, one of her, apparently neighbors of her parents said this, and so she remembered from that time. The saying goes this way: better to die fighting than to live alone. Better to die fighting than to live alone.
I assume the fighting is with someone else in the household.
Like your spouse. Yes. And the people you live with. And of course, it's said in jest because relationships are really, really important. Better to die fighting than to die alone. I thought that was so funny. We have a need for other people.
Has Elaine ever quoted that to you? Or
no, not yet. I haven't really shared that with her. The importance of our relationship, the importance of the people around, the importance of home, importance of our homes. And that brings us to Barzillai, who can be found in the book of Samuel, 2 Samuel, in fact, in the Old Testament. There are a couple of verses in chapter 17, verses 27 to 29. And then the main text is in chapter 19, beginning in verse 31. So to set the stage, King David was a soldier all of his life. And I think we could look back and say that he wasn't the best of parents. And he had a very spoiled child whose name was Absalom, who put together an insurrection and drove his father out of Jerusalem. So David and an entourage, they had to leave, and they fled north. And a man named Barzillai from a village, Mahanaim, provided food for them and his entourage because they were hungry. Now, as time goes on, passage of time, David is able to go back to Jerusalem, and he offers... He says to Barzillai, you come with me, and I'll look after you. And Barzillai says, and I just happen to have the text here so I can, in fact, read it. he says to him, come with me, and I'll look after you. And Barzillai says, he's 80 years old, The text says that. So he's 80 years old. It's a good age. He says, you know, I'm 80 years old. Can I discern what's pleasant and what isn't? I'm thinking maybe he can't really distinguish between this and that. Can your servant taste what he eats and what he drinks? So he's lost the sense of taste. He's got to that age. So, and that's no fun. Can I listen to the voice of singing men and singing women? He doesn't like rock and roll music anymore. So he's had enough of that, even big band music, probably. And so he says, no, I really don't. I'll go with you a little ways, but I want to stay here, because he says, let your servant return to his home, and I'll die in my own town, near the graves of my father and my mother. So he wants to go back to where he belongs, to his home. I think it's a powerful, powerful thing. And, you know, late in life, sometimes seniors have to move from one community to another, even one province to another. Mm-hmm. But it's not the most desirable thing. If we can, it's wise to stay in our community. Now, everybody has different circumstances, so this is not a rule at all. But this advice, his example, it seems to me, is very powerful advice. You know, there's a time to go to the city, and there's a time for whatever, but there's a time to think about your later years and where you want to be. And he wanted to be at home, where his ancestors had lived and where they were buried, and probably where his children were, and so on. Mm-hmm. So the importance of home and family. I must tell you something that really stuck with me. Mm-hmm. Of course, our home involves our sense of spirituality. If spirituality is, you know, what gets you up in the morning and why you feel well, and it's quite broad. It's an umbrella sort of. We had a resident named Edith, and she was born in 1901. So I knew her in the 1980s.
Wow.
And she was from a very religious family. And so she went off. She had even thought about becoming a nun, I think. And she went to Toronto. And so what do you do if you're out eating with people and they don't say grace or anything like that? Her mother said that she could genuflect with her tongue in her mouth. She wow. could make the sign. Just try that, everybody out there. Just try it.
Everyone just did.
The sign of the cross in your mouth. And I thought, well, this is so. She was raised in a situation where spirituality and doing these kinds of things was very important. But I've asked people that as well. Have you ever heard of this? But she had, and I never forgot it. The importance of continuing with your religious rituals.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, like that.
I was listening to a podcast this morning, and it was talking about anxiety and kind of as a kind of a social contagion and these sorts of things. And Edwin Friedman, you know, the rabbi, and some of his insights about. But anyway, this guy was talking about the social media and how we can be everywhere and nowhere all at once. But in light of that, how a physical location, a place of home, can be so grounding, especially these days when everyone feels such dislocated on how Canadians move, what, once every 3 to 5 years or something like that on average. So people are moving around, people can be everywhere and nowhere in the digital world. So the grounded, the rootedness of your faith, your traditions, but your physical home as well can be even all the more powerful.
That's right.
Yeah.
And you can take that with you
mm-hmm.
as the person you are.
Yeah.
So I often think of Barzillai, this biblical character, who we would say, I think, was wise. Of course, there's lots about wisdom in the Bible and the whole books mm-hmm. that we call wisdom instruction, but living wisely, living well. But I think of his example from time to time.
Mm-hmm.
And I sometimes think, too, if we think about our passing from this world, I had a resident at Grove Park who said that she had put these words on her father's gravestone at Barry Union. And they're from a Scottish poet. You can, I one time Googled them, but I liked what she said, and it stayed with me because both of my parents have departed this life. And it went this way. I've often used it, and I offer it to you too. To live on in the hearts we leave behind is not to die. To live on in the hearts of those we love, To live on in the hearts of those we love is not to die. And that wisdom that we have, the wisdom of the ages, comes down through our family, our grandparents, our parents, and so on. And so there's a sense in which you and I, as we pass on what we know, that we continue to live through those who find our instruction and our example helpful and useful. So so the sort of five words of wisdom that I've been talking about today, these are an older generations instructing us, and we can profit from that. Now, I hasten to add that Indigenous peoples have done much better with this than we have, because the elders are listened to, the elders' advice is sought out, the elders are the conduits of instructions and traditions, and we can really do better in learning with them.
I think there's this novelty bias, or this bias of youth. We think that younger is better, yes. Which is just definitely not always the case. But there is this kind of strange, deep lack of appreciation for age and wisdom. That's for sure. Yes. To our detriment. Yeah. And yes. Going back to the thing about cleaning up after yourself, when you mentioned, I remember at a conference, and there was this Indigenous man speaking about this idea of kind of when you make a kind of a big scale decision, thinking about what's the impact going to be seven generations from now. And of course, that's a long time. But the idea is, how is this going to impact other people? But when we think about wisdom and some of the things you've shared today, these bits of wisdom and insights are always going to be good. So Claude, thank you so much for sharing this, your insights, taking the time. And I just value the fact that you are such a good listener, and you've taken the time, to write a lot of this stuff down. It shows your care for people, and it shows the, the love that you have for God and other people. And this is one of your various ministries. So thank you for that, and for taking this time.
Listen. I have a final little story, Matthew.
Yeah, please tell it.
Yeah. When I taught at Brandon University, one of the other profs, his daughter had gone away to university. Mm-hmm. And she really didn't consider herself a leader. So in her letter that she wrote of application, she explained that really she was a very good follower. Mm-hmm. She was accepted. And the response to her application was that, we get a lot of leaders, but not so many followers. So, yeah. Yes, listeners, Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. That's good.
Enjoy being with you, Matthew.
That's good. As Christians, it's good. It's all about knowing who to follow, right? Yes. Here's a final word, perhaps. When you identify the right priorities on your deathbed, it's called perspective. But when you identify them before you get there, it's called wisdom.
Ah, yes.